Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
FM. It is the 20th of November, 2025, and it's Thanksgiving weekend this weekend, isn't it? Or is
that next weekend? It's next week.
This weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, it's next week. Ah.
Exactly. Yeah.
One it's week late. Till like.
Yeah.
It is. I know. Hey, it's a Santa Claus parade this weekend up in Toronto, which tends to coincide with American Thanksgiving, which. Tends to coincide with Black Friday and Cyber Monday. The e-com client is building. My big e-com client is building incredible traffic going towards next week. I don't even want to talk to them right now. You know, it's one of those situations where things feel like they're going really well. But aside from that, it was a really, really, really busy week. I can't believe it's so late in the year. Next week is going to be basically December.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it just feels like the year has gone so fast and so slow all at the same time.
Indeed. Okay, before we go any further, shout out to Audience Key and to Wix Studio, our sponsors. Thank you so much. Happy Black Friday and Cyber Monday to both of you. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, by the way, and Kristen Jackinger from Six Without Walls.
Hi, everybody.
And busy week this week. I think I was going to say the biggest story this week would be the Cloudflare outage, because that was pretty big. But then yesterday, for almost $2 billion, like $1.9 billion, SEMrush was acquired by Adobe. And that's probably the biggest story of the week. And then there's another story where there's an SEO reputation management connection with the Epstein files.
Yeah, crazy, crazy times we live in.
It's a big story week. But, you know, and I think the Epstein files is not as big as the Cloudflare story or the SEMrush story, at least not in our audience's worlds.
I agree, yeah.
But it is an instructive one, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. Tuesday sucked. Tuesday was like math day. a Cloudflare outage. Does anybody know why it happened yet?
No, I haven't seen an analysis yet. I did not experience a lot of issues with the Cloudflare outage, just a few. But I know some people are like completely down for the day. Like, it powers 20%. I thought it was more, by the way. The article we have says 20% of the internet, or the web, I should say, not the internet.
It says 20% of all websites, which is one thing. But there's also a bunch of apps that have their components powered on Cloudflare, that are residing on Cloudflare. Sitebook was down. The licensing server was shut down. So I had an emergency audit I had to run Tuesday morning. That didn't happen. in fact, I had to throw together a whole bunch of different stats from different places, just like in the olden days.
That's the olden days. Funny, we've been around long enough for the olden days, but the olden days are like mostly in the early 2000s.
20 years ago, but you know, we used to have to do it by hand, and if you got it, you still can. Just a matter of going and finding the data.
Very true.
But yeah, I mean, just tons of sites down, tons of apps down, tons of servers and ancillary programs down. Cloudflare with, you know, 1/5 of the web and websites going through it. I think it exposes like kind of a major vulnerability in the web that's coming more and more frequently. There's the web used to be so amazing because there was no way it would ever go down.
Oh, well, there was one.
But now there's separate choke points.
So in the early aughts when we had, I think it was 13 key pillars of the internet.
When the DNS servers went down, yeah.
Yeah, a hacker managed to knock down 2 or 3 of the pillars, and had they gotten to the fourth, they would have taken down the entire internet. It's a great talk at DEF CON. So
that is true, but taking down any one of the DNS servers was really, really difficult. Taking down 2 was next to impossible. Taking down 3, how the hell did that happen?
I don't remember. It was a very, like, they were talking about, because they were very impressed at DEF CON how this person historically was able to do this. But basically, mm-hmm. they overloaded the pillars, and the pillars started crashing. So then they moved to the next one and the next one. But it was stopped just in time before it overloaded the, I believe, the third or fourth pillar. I have to go back and look at the details. But basically, if they got that last pillar, which they almost did, they would have taken down the entire internet.
And these pillars, by the way, are the name servers with that direct the global traffic around the world.
People don't
know. The volume is such as if enough of them went down, the rest couldn't keep pace with the volume of traffic.
Exactly. They would overwhelm and catastrophically collapse. Yeah. Yeah. So, but interesting story from back in the day. So
did this affect anything? Say your website was down for a while and Google tried to crawl you. Did this really hurt you or not? According to John Mueller, probably not. Google might get a 500 error or might get a, it's not going to get a 404 error. Content not found. It's going to get a content forbidden error. And it's seen those before. It'll come back again.
Yeah, it does react more quickly now if you take like down your own site. It used to be you usually had like 24 to 72 hours before Google reacted at all. But in this case, when it's a global outage like this or a partially global outage, Google knows that. And they just send the ones back. So like I had a client that accidentally took themselves out their DNS one morning. And they were affected by like that night. But that's an individual case. And that's Google thinking your site's actually down. Where in this case,
that would be going on. And that would be a straight up 404, wouldn't it? Because it just suddenly doesn't exist anymore.
It might have been.
Black hole where it used to be. This is a 500, which is forbidden. You can't get in for some reason or another.
Yeah, and all over the internet at the same time. So Google knows there's a problem. So they send it back. So if you saw any fluctuations in your traffic, it's just because most of the internet was down and everything should return to normal. Visibility-wise.
Okay. While we're talking about Google, by the way, the Cloudflare thing is over. Not going to affect you. Not going to affect Google's crawl of your website. Not going to affect your rankings, or it shouldn't in any way whatsoever. Is Google testing out a new design or an old design, or just pulling up something out of the past by mistake? We're going to see. But apparently, there's an old Google search face that's out there somewhere.
Yeah, you didn't get a weird version of mushroom coffee this morning. You're seeing this old version of Google search. If you go to Search Engine Roundtable, they have pictures of it if you just want to reminisce a bit. I have not seen this. But it's happening all levels, mobile, tablet, and desktop. So if you see old search, it's probably just a bug and it'll come back in the near future.
This is not a bug. This is actually a really cool feature. Thank God it's finally in Google Search Console. Google's been teasing it for a few months. It's here. I seen it in the wild. I was real pleased to see it. Haven't used it myself yet, but I'm going to. Search annotation. Custom annotations are now in Search Console. Now, you've been able to do this in Google Analytics for the longest time, but in Search Console, you can now have up to 200 specific annotations per property that you're tracking. Christine? Oh, Christine, you're muted.
Oh gosh, how did I do that? I muted myself during a podcast. Let's accidentally click it. Sorry about that. I was saying that it has been available just in the main traffic, area, the graph at the top of the page, but it wasn't available in performance reports. So now it's available in all your performance reports.
Yep. So mark up your data. Remember stuff for, you don't have to use a notepad anymore. You can, or a spreadsheet anymore. You can now remember it directly in Search Console. Start annotating. Your clients really love you for it. Okay, this is what I think is the biggest story of the week by far. Like way by far. $1.9 billion for SEMrush. There is a bunch of really, 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 really happy people working in the SEMrush world right now.
There are, although I was surprised to find out that their stock is flat. So they're going to, it has been flat for a while, but they're going to sell out at $12 to people, pay out $12 to people who have the current stock.
Yep. Yeah, which so, incidentally is way higher, about $5 higher than the closing price on Tuesday of $6.89.
Yeah, 12 though I think was like their, I could be wrong, but I think it's their highest, like it's like been flat. So it's basically been 12 and then dropping and coming back up to 12. Hasn't really gone above 12 in some time. But either way, they're going to pay out at $12. So that'll be good for people who got in. I think when it first opened, it was, what is it, like $3 a share or something like that? It was pretty cheap.
Yeah, so. Anyone who bought SEMrush early, you had a really good week this week. Wednesday, you had a really good morning. So what does this mean for SEMrush? What does this mean for Adobe? What does this mean for digital marketing in general? I'm really intrigued by this.
Yeah, well, one thing I have not heard mentioned that I'd really like to hear about is, are they going to keep Search Engine Land publication and the SMX conference series? Are they going to sell it? Are they going to invest in it? Because we don't have a lot of industry publications, and Search Engine Land is one of our good ones. So
something to remember, Third Door Media, owner of Search Engine Land, was purchased by SEMrush, what was it, in January?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they also have Backlinko and a couple other products they have bought over the years. So Adobe's only spoken to SEMrush and its AI capabilities, like AI tracking, large language model tracking. They're not really talking to the other aspects of SEMrush, except that it's a marketing tool. They've made no mention in their press release, as far as I saw. Maybe I didn't see it, it's a long release, but about those properties. And I really hope if anyone from Adobe is listening, please do not just make those go away. Make sure someone buys them or you invest in them, because they're very important to the people who will be recommending your product internally. I think companies fail to understand that, like that have tools that aren't in the industry, that the people that recommend the tools to people to purchase are us. We're the ones that are the consultants or the internals that are telling them they should purchase it. So you want to make sure we're happy.
They might understand that. They might not understand that.
No, they might. I think most big companies don't.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, hey folks, Adobe now owns SMX, the SMX conference series. It owns Search Engine Land. It owns Third Door Media, MarTech, and a few other publications. And actually, I think there's another conference series that Third Door does as well in the analytics world. So those are all now owned by Adobe. Does Adobe really care about our little part of the universe? I think it does, but does it really know the universe well enough to know what to care about? And I think that's what Christine's concerned about. Adobe's been building a web development ecosystem for the last 8 or 9 years. I think back to the 2018 purchases of Magento, when they bought one of the top enterprise headless web development platforms, and then they changed it. But I think it's I think they call it now the Adobe Customer Experience. Never let engineers name stuff.
Right. Never let them name it.
And it's an amazing, by the way, it's an amazing suite. It's an amazing development suite. Magento was a excellent development suite, and Adobe's gone and Adobified it. They have been making a number of purchases and a number of moves. They bought another analytics suite just a few years ago. And that's become the Adobe journey experience, Adobe customer journey, sorry. I think a lot of SEOs are going to be learning about customer journeys a lot in the future because Adobe is going to become a really important part of our ecosystem. Now they're keenly interested in
AI portion. That's okay. I have it in front of me. They're interested in the AI portion, the LLM tracking. Although LLM tracking, just to be clear to people, is not an exact science. It's not like, oh, it's at position 9, because citations change all the time, even for the same prompt by two different people. You won't get the same citations or the same mentions necessarily. So it's kind of just comparative. Did we have a lot that were mentioned before? Did we have a lot that were at the top? Now they're, you know, not there, or they're not showing at all. Those would be the things you can do. You can't really look at it like an old ranking tool where you're like, oh, it's a position 9, now we're position 5, now we're position 1. It doesn't work that way in LLMs. They did make a little bit of a mistake, I think, and we may differ on this, but they called it, organizations can invest in their GEO alongside their SEO capabilities from their press release. There's not a separate field called GEO, so I hope they correct that.
Oh, there is now. Because Adobe's going to be charging you for a separate field called GEO, and yeah. It doesn't matter if it's separate or not. It doesn't matter if it's a different practice or not. It doesn't matter if different things are done or not. There is now a space carved out that people will be paying for. It exists.
Well, I'm not going to say it exists just because Adobe says it does. They also may change their marketing when they realize that.
It will be a different hockey league, like the American Hockey League versus the National Hockey League.
But it's not.
But the league exists. No, it does. Adobe just carved the space out, and they're going to be charging money for it. And
they're going to try.
And they will be successful, Christine. I promise you that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, absolutely will. And I know this because there are hundreds of billions invested in them being successful.
Sure, but not in that word. They can call it AI search or something else. But anyway,
it doesn't. Again, it almost doesn't matter what they call it. GEO is such a wonderful little tag for marketers.
No, it's not.
I don't got to like it myself. Doesn't matter. They don't care. But the money that's going to go behind making this work.
One tool.
They don't have one tool. They're integrating what SEMrush has in with a much larger tool set that they've been acquiring over the last 8 to 10 years.
If they try to charge separately for it, SEOs will go against them, and that's why Wix became who they did.
They're not marketing anymore. They're marketing. Adobe doesn't market.
Companies, right?
Adobe markets to large scale enterprise clients.
Right.
They don't care about the small market anymore. SEMrush won't care about the small market.
And when I'm inside a company, I'm the one who decides what tools we use. Decides the tools. And if a company said to me,
doesn't care about the small market, you're likely to be priced out of SEMrush.
I work with big companies near future. Too. I'm saying that if they tried to market to me a separate tool at a different charge that was called GEO, I would tell the company not to purchase it. So it's a separate thing. Company, and we use the one tool to measure everything we need to measure. So
I suspect a lot of the companies using SEMrush in the future will be on Adobe platforms. In fact, I think there's probably going to be two versions moving forward, one of which gets a lot less energy than the Adobe version does. I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
We just have different opinions how it go. I don't think charge separate.
Adobe's the board.
Adobe's important for sure. Also because Google G4 was such a disaster with companies. Like, I know companies here in Vegas who took it off their systems worldwide and stopped paying for it. They're paying $100,000 per instance, and they took it all away and went to Adobe because G4 was so difficult for them to use. So they definitely have a market. I'm just saying, if they try to start charge separately for a product, SEOs do determine generally what SEO tools they use, and people aren't going to tell their companies to pay out of their very limited budgets, because nobody gives you tools budgets that are worth a lot, even in big companies, extra for a tool they know they don't really need. So I just hope Adobe doesn't decide to run it aside, alongside is what they said, as a separate thing. So, but we don't know anything right now. So we'll see.
Has Adobe announced their intentions? Have they said we're going to keep this as a standalone product? It's going to be serving the markets it continually serves?
No. Their press release says that they are going to... hold on, their press release is... I got to get it to come up. Come on. So the press release said that... today, Adobe and Semrush Holdings announced that they have entered into a definitive agreement under which Adobe will acquire Semrush, a leading brand and visibility platform, blah, 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 talking about the cash transaction. Semrush is a powerful partner for the marketers looking to manage brand visibility and audience reach through its data-driven generative engine optimization and search optimization solutions. So it sounds like they're going to run two solutions separately, but we'll see. So. Yep,
they're going to charge for it. This is Adobe. Honest to goodness, if it moves, it gets charged and it gets integrated into their bigger system. The thing to watch is if there's going to be a bunch of layoffs at Semrush. And if there is, I think that's a signal that the tool that SEOs use and are familiar with is going to get degraded awfully quick or fully integrated into the Adobe environment.
Yeah.
If you see job creation at Semrush, on the other hand, then I'm dead wrong. And they're going to be improving the tool and making it wider and greater available. No matter what, there was a piece, I think it was in Search Engine Journal today, people reacting to the purchase.
Most people felt it was fairly positive. No one was really talking about SEL. I don't think most people in the industry realize how many things are attached to Semrush now.
Semrush was on their own buying spree for a while. I don't think they knew that they were going to be targeted and bought, but they were on a buying spree for a while, weren't they?
Yeah, and they were probably building themselves up to be purchased. They probably just didn't know who would purchase them. But the general comments I've seen in some private groups, like on WhatsApp internationally, is that, well, welcome to get another tool because it'll be too expensive for you to use. So it depends on if Adobe makes it so businesses that aren't Fortune 100s and 500s can use it or not and afford it. And if they can't, there are still other tools out there that we know do a really good job, like SEO Clarity and Ahrefs, which is a bit expensive. SEO Clarity, I think, is a better buy, but it does tracking of like LLM visibility and all the other things that they do. Plus, we have a whole bunch of other tools now for DSC, which are really helpful. So if you love Semrush, it's not there aren't other tools out there for you. There will be if it becomes too expensive. But if they integrate it into their systems, when I went to the Adobe pricing page, all of them say ask for pricing. There's no pricing.
And it's one of those situations where, you know, if you have to ask.
You have to ask. Yes. And they also separate customer journey analytics from web and mobile analytics, from Adobe content analytics, from Adobe product analytics.
I've worked in the Adobe environment, and I'm telling you, they charge for everything.
Yeah, I'm just telling people that don't know. Yeah, people probably don't know. So anyway, so what you normally get in one package in our industry, they already charge separately. So Semrush will probably be bundled in with something and charged as a separate product.
Okay, now that's Adobe's modus operandi. I think Christine and I both hope to be wrong about this. Like I know I hope you're wrong, Christine. I hope I'm wrong, but this is what they do. So, you know, and what they've done in the past. So past predicts future. One thing that is cool is Adobe markets themselves to the biggest of the companies. These are the large enterprise companies, the ones that we all want to represent. And a lot of these companies are so big, they haven't really thought about SEO for a long time. And sometimes when they do, maybe various divisions of the company get into SEO and then you can get a gig with them that way. But by and large, most of these companies think SEO is an afterthought at best. Many of these companies have treated SEO as an afterthought at best. I think this puts it right in the boardroom. Makes SEO much more popularized amongst corporations again. You disagree?
I disagree. Yeah. They don't think of it. Yeah, because I've worked internally at Fortune 500s, and they have SEO teams. They don't put a lot of money into the team. They expect a lot of results out of the team.
I think that's going to change. I think there's going to be a lot more money put into search because, as we've been saying all along, the key to getting into generative results is technical SEO. The biggest key is technical SEO, followed by followed by a lot of mention of your content, and then good content. But crawlability, openness, sending all the right digital signals through markup languages. That's all the technical SEO end of things, and that's really important to making your website as widely available to every type of crawler. I think it's going to be beneficial for us in the long run, to be honest.
Now, it is interesting that Adobe shares fell 2% on the news, while SEMrush skyrocketed 74% to $12 the last day ever. So I'm not sure why Adobe lost 2% on the news, but it could be other things going on we don't know about in the market right now.
It's other things going on, I think. It's earnings time right now. And even if Adobe is, I think we're seeing the tech world is earning more money quarter over quarter over quarter, but the advancement is slowing. And I think that is spooking investors a little bit and spooking the market a bit. Adobe, again, just made a $2 billion purchase to what is clearly an empire, a little ecosystem, or a very large web dev ecosystem that they're building.
And I say, please, if anyone from Adobe is listening, make sure that SEL, SMX, and all those other properties survive somehow. Even if you just sell them to somebody, where they're important.
Treat them good. They're not only important to our community, but they're important to your community in the long run too, because they're the ones who they're now your spokespeople. Yeah. They're not your spokespeople. They're the spokespeople for what you're doing.
That's one thing Matt Katz and Google always understood about SEOs is we could, one, help them fix things, find the issues that want, you know, find the black hat methods and have them fix those. Not good for us, good for them. But also that we were good spokespeople for Google search. So with our articles and our access and all that sort of stuff. So we're often the ones that they forget have a lot of power inside how this stuff gets done. So
not just that. Traditionally, the SEO community has been the one to explain how stuff has worked to mm-hmm. the greater community. It used to be that journalists would look at Search Engine Journal, Web Pro News, Site Pro News, Search Engine Watch, and Search Engine Land to understand how to report a search story.
They get it wrong a lot.
Well, they do. In most mainstream journalists' defense, they get like 6 assignments a day. They got to become instant experts in everything they're writing about, and it's just, you know, it's just way too much. So they try, they really try, but yeah, they often get it so wrong.
Yes.
Speaking of a place that often gets it so wrong, The Verge.
Actually, did interesting, okay this time.
This is an interesting story. It totally touches on our world, but it touched on a world that existed, 14, 15 years ago.
How it still exists. It's not the same.
It anymore. Does, but it's a little different now. Yes, it's different now. Like, so the online reputation management sector of SEO is very, very real. And I've done reputation management. I did it once. I don't like doing it. I decided after doing it, I didn't feel so good about doing it because there's a reason people come to you. How to say it? I'm not one to judge whether it's right or wrong. I don't know if it's right or wrong. I haven't a clue if it's right or wrong, but people come to you because somehow they got very bad search results around their name.
Yeah.
I helped somebody out of that jam once, and I don't know if I was right or wrong, and it's haunted me ever since, because maybe I helped the scammer scam more people. It's bugged me ever since. I don't want to ever do it again.
So we did it, former person on the show and my former business partner, Dave Davies, and I did the CEO of Vice before they were going IPO. The former business partner of him that started Vice with him under another name was the guy who became the leader of the Proud Boys.
Gavin McInnes, a terrible person. Yeah.
So he wrote these negative articles because he was jealous about the success that they had with Vice. And so we helped on something like that. Everybody who does reputation management has lines. I will not help somebody who harmed people or cannot prove to me they did not harm people. But I will help in something like that where someone's just mad at you and they have power to write negative articles. We helped with that. But there are people in the industry who are much less definitive, delineating. Cool. And in this case, I don't know if this person was actually in the industry or just knew how to do it, because that happens as well. But somebody, after he was arrested in the early aughts, and didn't Epstein serve some jail time at that point, so 19, 14 months or something?
Yeah, well, he had gotten his reduced jail time through the deal he made in Florida.
Yeah, that's a whole...
This is an Epstein story, by the way, folks. So,
we kind of bury the lead here. Epstein wrote that he had been, getting a lot of negatives on the Google search, and he wanted someone to help him with his reputation management. And then someone named Al Seckel, perhaps Epstein's accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell's sister's late partner, responded later that evening, this is from The Verge, sharing what she was seeing on like the Wikipedia page and all these other things. He decided that he wanted to get that stuff buried. And so there's basic tenets to how you do reputation management. You can't generally just get rid of something, but you can bury it deep enough in the results that nobody will see it, generally speaking, because most people don't go past page one or two.
In the most recent release of documents from the quote-unquote Epstein files, whatever the Epstein files are these days, but in a leak or a release that happened in the last week, correspondence between Jeffrey Epstein and a guy named Al Seckel, who is into online reputation management, about the steps Seckel took to change or outrank negative content. And there was also discussion of content that Seckel simply couldn't outrank, but could augment, such as Wikipedia entries. So this exchange took place in 2010. So Christine and I heard like this instant messaging back and forth the other day. The story pops up, and this is the time when her and I were both like frequently on the lecture circuit. Like if there was a conference somewhere in the United States, her or me or both of us and the whole gang we hung out with would be speaking at it. And Al Seckel, this character, I mean, there's a very high likelihood that we came across this guy at one time or another, either in an audience or as part of the entourage. I mean, it's totally possible. And I don't think the guy's name is actually Al Seckel.
It may be hidden. Now, what I want to do distinguish here, because it is The Verge. The Verge normally writes about anything done with an SEO tactic, because the whole SEO industry is in using that tactic, or has an alligator at a party on a rooftop that nobody heard of. But in this article, I have to say they're pretty fair. It's SEO tactics. So it doesn't mean an SEO person took this job, but it does mean somebody took SEO tactics and used it to push down the information. So Rand Fishkin is quoted in this, and he acknowledged it was pretty good strategy. There's more sophisticated things that could have been done, because like the email says, like the Huffington Post is extremely hard to move because it's so powerful, has millions of links to it, and uploads massive new original content on a daily basis. But you only have to outrank the article that's ranking on the page, not the site. So whoever wrote that wasn't actually someone who's probably doing the SEO, but probably hiring somebody. He said, Rand Fisher just commented, these are pretty standard practices when it comes to doing reputation management. I would definitely not have touched this with a million foot pole, especially after he'd already been arrested and done jail time, and all the other things that people knew about him. But basically he created charities, and they use those charity sites to push up the results to make him look good and push down the results. It is something regular people should be aware of, though, that this is a tactic that can be used on people. So if you're really looking into someone, go past page one. Because they usually can't get rid of the result, but they can push it to page five or six. So,
that's really important advice. Like as Christine said, if you are researching into an individual, look past page one, page two, page three, because you can't get stuff out of the engine. You can only push it downwards.
It's different, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Once it starts getting pushed downwards and stops getting attention from users, that downward trajectory tends to continue. I don't know, it's weird. I try to be non-judgmental, so the easiest way for me not to be in a position to judge is to not touch it at all.
Oh,
and just get, it,
Dave and I had a funny one. I'll just have to end this real quick. But we were working for a client, and we were just doing SEO stuff for them every month. And they decided to do a show here where they're undercover as a boss. I will not say the company, it's well past the NDA, but still. And we woke up to a reputation nightmare because they hated him so much on that show. They created websites overnight about how much they hated him and forums all over the world about how much they hated him. And so Dave got a nice new bump in his monthly, you know, his monthly, you know, little chunk of change there because we suddenly had to take on a reputation management issue. Don't surprise, by the way, your SEO team with appearances on shows and live things and things that might go wrong. Let them know ahead of time so they can prepare just in case. It was funny.
If you're doing an Ask Me Anything on Reddit, even if you're doing something like that, let your SEO team know ahead of time.
Yeah. It's funny. Dave texts me in the middle of the night. He goes, go look up our client's name. I was like, what? Like, oh my gosh. So anyway. So this is a tactic that's common in SEO. Epstein used it there to bury a lot of his stuff. I worked for somebody here in Las Vegas who created an entire reputation management agency to hide his reputation. And when he didn't pay me $13,000. I did a background check and found out he'd been in prison two times, stole $300,000 from the Wynn and was paying off the mob not to kill him.
So, yeah.
So anyway.
Okay. Moving along. Unfortunately, moving sort of sideways because we're still inside the Epstein files.
This is a quick
former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers on Wednesday resigned from the board of OpenAI. By the way, Summers was also the provost at Harvard University and was teaching at Harvard University. He's no longer doing either. He resigned from the board of OpenAI after the release of this section of the Epstein files showed a number of correspondence between Summers and Epstein in the years after Epstein was charged in like 2006. So. There's no evidence that Summers had anything to do with sex trafficking or that he had anything to do with pedophilia, but there was a great deal of communication between him and Epstein, and for that, Epstein, like if you have anything to do with Epstein, you are so toxic.
Go on, please. I was going to say, it's one of those rare cases in the situation, I think, where somebody actually feel shame about just being associated with him because there is no evidence that he did anything illegal, but just that he asked him about women advice, which is just ew. But he does seem to have, because he initiated all this, he stepped away, he's going back from all his commitments, he's left Harvard. I'm sure there was given a little push on all those too, but it does seem he actually feels a bit ashamed about his associations and is going to step back from public life for the time being.
I'm sure there are dozens, if not hundreds, of very similar stories, much more quietly playing out in across America and around the world right now. Andrew Windsor was stripped of his royal honorifics. He used to be, like 2 weeks ago, he was Prince Andrew. Now he's just Andrew Windsor.
And even it's his relative is paying for him to stay in the home. He was stripped of the house and everything as well.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah. Well, when the relative gets bored of paying for him, he will be living in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
Under a bridge, perhaps, with the other trolls.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, and the world mourned.
And so the reason I put this next story into the grid is because it is Sundar from Google saying this. This is not just a random comment.
There's speculation out there that the bubble's happening. So yeah, AI bubble. A lot is happening? Isn't it happening? We don't know. Honest to goodness, we don't know. If it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck, maybe it's a duck, but we don't know.
And let's call it large language model just because AI is an entire field and this is just not actually AI. Because I don't want people to think like the AI that's doing things like for medicine and science, it's based on a totally different set of math and processes and all that is involved in this. This is the LM bubble, the, you know, Perplexity, OpenAI, Gemini.
So the very vast majority of you are using today as AI has a buttload of money invested in it with almost zero chance of cost recovery.
Yes, completely. Yeah. And I've been
and
for some time.
People are showing.
Good.
The people see the thing with burn money is you got to keep burning it. It's like throwing it into a furnace, and the money is what keeps the the furnace going. And if there's no more new money to shovel into the furnace, then the fires go out, and that's when the bubble bursts. And that may be happening right now. People may be getting worried about how much has gone in with so little return coming out today, tomorrow, or for what appears to be a very long time.
Yeah. So,
one more quick thing to add to this. In 86 or 96, at the time, U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned of irrational exuberance in the markets. This was 3 or 4 years ahead of the actual dot-com crash in 99-2000. Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, reminisced on this, suggesting that industry can overshoot in investment cycles. And looking at the internet right now, there's a lot of excess investment. None of us would question whether the internet was profound, but there seems to be elements of irrationality in the AI investment. In fact, he expects AI to follow what happened in .com. Hype, irrational investment, bubble bursts, and then the real industry picks itself up.
So the OpenAI has a $1.4 trillion in deals being done around it. And he's expected to have revenue this year of less than 1/1000th of the planned investment. This is from BBC. We also know that by 2030, they're expecting to have to make $1 trillion a year as an industry to break even. It was $870 billion last year. So the amount investing is going up, the amount of use is going down, the amount of needed monies to recoup anything is going up tremendously. And like we said, it's a 1/1000th of the expected revenue. And we're going into year 5 of the investment cycle next year. And I just do not see that we're not going to have some sort of correction. How large it is, who knows? But it is 30% of the US GDP. So it is something everyone needs to be thinking about. So
the other thing that we're not quite mentioning here is some of the leading players in the AI revolution are questioning the viability of LLMs. As the foundation moving forward, I'm thinking of the fella Duca, who's working at Meta right now. Actually, just officially announced he'll be leaving at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's why I'm leaving, because he thinks LLMs are dead.
Yep. Yeah. Even Hinton, the titular godfather of AI. Suggests that there's a limit that LLMs, there's a ceiling for LLMs, and as human as he wants them to be, they're not going to go past that. And so we have people talking about that, while at the same time talking about the 1,000-to-1 burn rate to recovery cycle that OpenAI seems to be in right now. So you put those two concepts in the same sentence, and there's a little bit of fear in the market right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about it on LinkedIn for some time with leaders in the industry, but it's getting more and more like this is happening, not maybe it could possibly. But we'll see. Hopefully maybe there's something that comes out that changes the direction it seems to be going in. The 30% of the GDP is pretty massive. So
That's terrifying.
And yes, it is.
So now you got to think 30% of the GDP. It's not just LLMs, but building out the infrastructure to make this revolution possible. That's what's driving a big chunk of the about a third of the chunk of the economy right now.
And also big players have pulled all their money out of NVIDIA, and Google has, we're going to talk about it in a minute, Google has found that they might not need NVIDIA chips. They might be able to use other chips, older chips, which are less expensive. So NVIDIA lost all of Thiel's investment and SoftBank's investment in the last week. They moved it all out of there. And there's a couple other very large players that have moved theirs out as well. When they start moving their money like that, you have to start looking. And they're not all putting it in the same place. They're just choosing different options where to re-put that money. So
that was a problem NVIDIA had that I don't think it was ever going to be able to solve. Like, sure, it had the massive head start. And it had like the chip, but how long does it take to reverse engineer and replicate? I think the Chinese had it done in like what, like six to eight months. It's only a matter of time before everybody else starts making their own extraordinary high end chips.
And this is going to go under a duh, but companies don't always look at the long term; they look at the short term. So I'm hoping they understood that when they were the only chip, when they were running out of chips, and saved money and put it into other places. So they knew there'd be a rainy day at some point where people would find a way to not use NVIDIA's chips anymore. So moving on, because we've got not a lot of time left, and we got still some stories to cover. This is a quick one. OpenAI is being sued for infringing on a library app maker's Sora trademark. You know, I worked with a client who was a trademark attorney. There's no way they didn't know this trademark existed. They just decided to probably ignore it because it's a small player. But OneDrive, Overdrive is an app, and it's in its lawsuit. This is from Reuters that they filed Wednesday. The OpenAI's app will cause consumer confusion with its own Sora app, which provides ebooks and other digital library materials to students. So I'm sure they
OverDrive just doesn't deliver to students. OverDrive works for, I don't know about American public library systems, but OverDrive works for the Toronto public library system. I imagine other Canadian libraries, and I'm assuming other libraries around the world.
Yeah, but I'm sure they saw that and just figured we have money and we'll just move on, because trademarks are researched really well, and this is a trademark that would be in the trademark database.
My very first thought on this was there's nothing here that 15 to 20 million can't fix.
Probably, most likely, yeah.
And 15 to 20 million to OpenAI is 2 or 3 hours of burn rate. So like, you know. Pretty much. And there's nothing here that a few million won't solve. So this one is weird. A federal judge had to rule that Meta is not a monopoly.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this case some time ago. I don't remember when, but apparently good news for Meta, because there have been a lot of bad things we've had to report on about Meta and their own actions. They were found not to be a monopoly, so they can continue as they were. And
in a world sick with social media applications, the one that is like shrinking, that only old people go to these days, like the one that is making itself irrelevant by the minute, is the one that they went after for that they finally ruled is not a monopoly.
The people sue,
you know who is?
Because of Instagram and WhatsApp acquisitions.
Well, indeed. You know, LinkedIn's got a monopoly on annoying me. Of all the social media, no one annoys me or is as useful as LinkedIn. It's annoying, eh?
So Meta got some good news for a change. And then moving into just a little, this came from the DOJ. By the way, if you are in search or just want to know things about search engines, Google especially, look at their Department of Justice monopoly case, because we keep getting these stories released over time that people just dig deeper and deeper. So Google internally discussed 6 different options for giving or not giving publishers control over AI usage. The options range from do nothing new to add options, such as opt out of just AI overviews, formerly known as SGE. This is from SEO Roundtable, Barry Schwartz. And apparently they decided, no, we were not giving, that was the hard line. They will not give anyone a choice. They will not give publishers a choice on being included or not being included. So they went with, go ahead.
Well, they had this range of options, option 1 to option 6, ranging from no new controls on search, no change on how search works, to introducing separation of grounding versus training for search generative experience, and a whole bunch of different points in between. Some new controls, introducing granularity, introducing more granularity, introducing even more granularity, and then total separation of grounding and training. Yeah, you know what? Nobody would have understood that crap. They're not giving any options.
But they could have made it understandable. But still, they picked two, which is no new controls, but reposition publicly that the no snippets impacts more than display. This is also no added new controls, and that's what it says. And publish can use no snippet to impose a limit on how much content is used for grounding and display. That's actually not true, because if you use no snippet, you don't get included at all. So there's no control there. It's either you're in or you're out. You don't get granular control. Anyways, that's the one they chose. People should read this. They've got a diagram here from the actual DOJ document that gets into some more detail.
At the end, though, we should be clear on this. I'm not clear on this. If you use no snippet, what can you keep sections of your site out of training data and grounding data?
They do have a way now that they did this years ago and they brought it back.
I knew they respect
it. This, you can do it on a paragraph or something, say, don't put this in training. But how much that, I haven't seen anybody test it. So we don't know if it actually really works or doesn't really work. So
your choice is at paragraph level or basically in your robots text.
Oh, no. Or in the meta, the no index, you know, there's a place up there to put in the control.
They respect page level no index, no fault?
It's not the no index, it's a different code, but it's they do for that, but it means that whole page is out of the training. And you may just not want something in there. So supposedly a page level control at like an element, HTML element, but we don't actually know. I've never seen a test on whether they exclude or not. It'd be a good test to run though. I might do that. So
Business Insider is interested in the GEO rush. Again, this is definitely pushed by the mention of SEO and GEO in the Verge article about the Epstein emails. Representatives from Google, Microsoft, Perplexity, and asked some questions about it. Danny Sullivan from Google, Christian Madovan from Microsoft, and not sure from Perplexity, but comes down to Danny's like, just do SEO.
Yeah, so is the person from Bing, basically. And they say, make sure you're adding this. This is the same thing we always hear, but for people who are newer, people who don't do search, do something that's good for humans. Don't just do it first, the LLMs, just do SEO. So all the normal stuff. Perplexity had a comment that I really don't want to repeat just because comment obviously was not knowledgeable about SEO itself and just talking about Perplexity. So it's not relevant to like the SEO industry. It's just more about Perplexity itself.
Yeah. By the way, Perplexity does ping Google. It does ask Google to try to verify information that's bringing out and stuff. So theoretically, you're doing good SEO for Google, you're getting good placements in Google, you're probably doing yourself good in the Perplexity environment as well.
Yes. So on AI search, AI mode, AI overview, AI Google everything, they have announced that AI mode is now powered by the new Gemini 3 model, as opposed to what it was previously using, which I forget the name. Was it just Gemini?
What the heck? If it's Gemini 3, it sort of pre-notes that it was Gemini, not 3. Probably 2 something, right? Against. Honestly, I don't know. So but now, apparently Gemini 3 is the smartest. I mean, according to Google, Gemini 3 is the smartest LLM out there. Results may vary.
According to Sundar, it's shipping Gemini 3 that includes AI mode in search with more complex reasoning, I hate that word reasoning because that's not what it really does, new dynamic experiences. It's the first time they're shipping Gemini in search on day one. AI mode, this is from SEO Roundtable, AI mode in search now uses Gemini 3 for generative experiences like immersive visual layouts, interactive tools, and simulations, all completely on the fly based on your query. So we'll see how it works.
Again, results may vary. Some assembly may be necessary.
Definitely.
Okay. And if you're using Gemini 3, Gemini 2.5 or ChatGPT 4.0, 5 or 5.1, you might find some discrepancies between what they're featuring and the top 10 results. Weirdly enough, according to Search Atlas, the biggest discrepancies of all are found with Gemini.
Yeah, and also the so we have things that like say they rank, like the two people talk about ranking in LLMs, AI's search, and they don't use ranking.
How does that work in LLMs? So you get mentions, you get visibility, but ranking?
Yeah, there's no ranking. So a lot of I don't know that it's exactly the same. I read about a patent though for LLMs. It sounds the same as neural matching. So in Google organic search, after the ranking factors are applied, they use neural matching, which is just the query to the text on the page to re-rank that final sort in the top. I don't know if it's top 10 or top 20 or whatever it is. And so they re-rank it. So this sounds like they skip the ranking process because all they're trying to do is grab citations to ground the model's predictive text, right? And they use the neural matching component. And you don't see all the citations they pull because they may pull 100 or 200. Google doesn't want to show you all that. So sometimes you're going to see different citations, even if two people do the same prompt, they might get different citations. But I believe it's probably, from what I've read, based on the concept of neural matching, if it's not actually neural matching, algorithm is already out there. So basically, they're skipping the ranking component. They don't need to rank it because they're not ranking anything. They're just grabbing quality content, right? So they may be using, we don't know, I'm just saying, they could be using NavBoost to like grab quality documents, right? And then add others to it based on neural matching. We don't know. But the one patent I saw about how they're doing it is based on the concept of neural matching, but the query to the text on the page. So,
but even then, unless there is a series of followable links leading to specific web pages or domains, in an order that suggests we think this one is better than this one, which is better than that one. There's no actual ranking going on. We need a word. And again, visibility is too general. Your vis score.
It's quality with neural matching. So they're taking a quality score Google has and the neural matching. I'm not saying they're using specifically that algorithm, but in general concept. And they're using that to pull what they pull for the citations for the grounding.
Well, indeed, but we need, how to say this, we need a term to be able to say to our clients in place of ranking when we're talking in generative AI, because we can't say ranking. That's the wrong word. That's a misleading word.
Yeah.
Visibility is too general a word. I mean, so you were visible in generative search, and I'm very proud of that.
Citation visibility could be it.
There you go. But then again, can you show the citation and show exactly how it showed up and where, and that there's a progression of getting better?
No, there wouldn't be a getting better, and it could be changed every time. So what Google originally did is they showed us all the citations. So you could look in labs at like 100 citations that it pulled back, and those might change in and out because it really may be 500 citations because all they're trying to do is get the predictive text model to write properly. Right. So they don't say drink a gallon of your urine to get rid of kidney stones or glue your cheese on pizza when it first came out. It's called RAG in LLM circles. But so that's all they're doing. And so they're just pulling quality documents that match the query to write from. So sometimes that's the same and sometimes they're very different, or sometimes they're showing you one portion of the 100 they pulled back. I'm just saying 100 is a random number. And or they're showing you another portion of the 100 you pulled back. So there's really, when people say like, I've got a tool that measures all this, you really can't measure it. You can see that you don't exist. You can see that you exist often, but you can't really say, oh, I existed in this query, because if I gave 10 of our friends the same prompt, they might all get different citations somewhat. They won't be completely different, but they won't be similar.
And this brings us to a weirdness that we're going to have to deal with moving forward. So step sideways, I got a mentee. There's a young woman I'm working with at a large community medical clinic team in North Toronto, who I'm teaching the basics of SEO to. I'm walking her through the Google Search Console suite, and we get to the subject of rankings, and my brain freezes. I'm showing her, you know, you can what average rank, trying to explain what average ranking means. You're ranking against some things that are like ranking in 99 and some things that are in one. This is your average placement. And then I freeze thinking, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of AEO and generative stuff that I can't really explain here. It makes placement and Search Console tracking not tricky, impossible.
Yes. By the way, before we get to that real quick, because I know you're moving to the next story, Perplexity does use Google's rankings because Perplexity doesn't have its own system for their quality.
Yeah.
So if you rank on Google, you're more likely to be similar in Perplexity. Also, your quality signals in Google are based on your SEO value. So even though they're not ranking you, your SEO site quality does matter.
Important. Yeah. By the way, the studio has somebody coming up right after us. We're getting the hook in a couple of minutes, so we got to move. So where are we going next?
Yeah. So what you were going to real quick? Where were you going? You were going to something.
Oh, I don't know. Honestly,
why do we have these rankings in Search Console? Because of everything we just said, it's almost impossible to rank because they change all the time. You get different data sets. The same prompt doesn't produce the same thing. So Google is coming out and saying, basically, we really haven't found a way to track this in Search Console for you. That's why it's not there, not because we don't care.
Okay.
Google AI mode is, we've talked about this before, but this is finally rolling out. They're finally rolling out agentic booking and research for your vacations, where you can have like a little notepad that opens up. It's not called notepad, but where you can put your research down. And then it also has your agentic booking where you can use an agent to book things. But as we've told people, be very careful about agents because they can be attacked very easily. So you don't want something just sitting there on your machine. Make sure you're isolating the usage of it.
Okay, this is gonna have to be our last story. Studio is about to close down on us. If you're using LLMs.txt files, a large study has been done on this. It doesn't work. They're useless. Don't use them. They're not going to, the LLMs cannot respect them. If you're using LLM.txt, don't use LLM.txt. Even writing the file is probably a waste of your time. Friends, we have gone like the full hour. Usually a lot of our episodes have been going over hour. This time we're actually recording through the studio and they got another show coming up. We got to get out of here. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast on Thursday, the 20th of November, 2025, at WMR.FM. It's a bunch of stories that we're leaving on the side, but we're going to get to them next week. Until then, friends, be kind to each other. Be patient with each other. Rank well. Be well. And we'll talk to you soon.